Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to this edition of our English feature program. I'm Philippa Hitchin. Coming up today, ecumenical relations under the spotlight. The new leadership of the Lutheran World Federation invites Pope Benedict to join in the organisation of the 500th anniversary of the Protestant Reformation in 2017. And the General Secretary of the World Council of Churches meets with the Pope to discuss closer cooperation and shared concerns for Christians across the Middle East. Lutherans have invited Pope Benedict XVI to join with them in organising an ecumenically accountable commemoration of the 500th anniversary of the Protestant Reformation. At a recent audience in the Vatican, the new president of the Lutheran World Federation, Bishop Munib Younan, invited the Holy Father to work together with us in preparing this anniversary, so that in 2017 we are closer to sharing in the bread of life than we are today. Underlining the need to recognise both the damaging aspects of the Reformation and the progress that has been made in ecumenical relations since then, Dr. Younan noted that for Lutherans there is joy in the liberating power of the gospel proclaimed afresh by the reformers.
We are called, both Lutherans and Catholics, to a common vocation of witnessing to the world for the sake of Christ's kingdom in this world. Thus we invite you to work together with us in preparing this anniversary so that in 2017 we are closer to sharing in the bread of life than we are today. In love, we ask God to bless your distinctive ministry and the entire Catholic Church. We ask that you remember in your prayers the Lutheran World Federation, and our 145 member churches all over the world.
Addressing the seven-member Lutheran World Federation delegation, Pope Benedict expressed gratitude for the many significant fruits of the Catholic-Lutheran dialogue, saying in the years leading up to 2017, Catholics and Lutherans are called to reflect anew on where our journey towards unity has led us and to implore the Lord's guidance and help for the future.
With God's help, it has been possible slowly and patiently to remove barriers and to foster visible bonds of unity by means of theological dialogue and practical cooperation, especially at the level of local communities. Last year marked the 10th anniversary of the signing of the Joint Declaration of the Doctrine of Justification, which has proved a significant step along the difficult path towards re-establishing full unity among Christians and a stimulus to further ecumenical discussion. In these years, leading up to the 500th anniversary of the events of 1517, Catholics and Lutherans are called to reflect anew on where our journey towards unity has led us and to implore the Lord's guidance and help for the future.
Those accompanying Bishop Younan at the papal audience was the new General Secretary of the Lutheran World Federation, Reverend Martin Junger. I caught up with him after the audience to find out more about the meeting and about plans for the forthcoming Reformation anniversary.
Yeah, I think it was very significant for us to be here and to be able to express again our commitment, which we understand is a shared commitment for the unity of the Church. A shared commitment to bilateral dialogue, to further theological understanding among ourselves, but also to further a united witness in a world longing for signs and concrete expressions of unity and peace.
You have a particular concern, don't you, about the global financial crisis, and you are particularly grateful to the Pope for his moral leadership in this area.
Yes, indeed, we are concerned. We are concerned because of the impact which we see not only on people, but also on the moral fabric of societies, entire societies. 2 weeks ago, 1 week ago, we were worldwide, and also as churches, we were reminding the World AIDS Day. And it hurts when you see that it is possible to organize money in few weeks in order to rescue a financial industry, but it is not possible to organize the needed funds in order to respond to the need of people in Africa, in Asia, in Eastern Europe, needing the assistance and the solidarity of the world. So we indeed appreciate the words which the Pope has said in this respect.
Another area of common concern that you were able to talk about was the Holy Land, wasn't it, and the need for a just peace there.
Yeah, indeed. We have been observing with thankfulness the initiative of the Holy Father to bring together the bishops and to have the synod here late October. And we see a lot of shared understanding in this respect as well. We are quite convinced that without peace in Jerusalem, without peace in the Holy Land, there is not going to be peace in the world. And therefore, we consider this to be a sector where we have to really bring together all what we can bring together in order to achieve peace also there.
In your message to the Pope, you talk about a dramatic warming of relations. Many people today talk about an ecumenical winter. Is it possible to talk about, do you think, real progress, say, in the past decade since the landmark declaration on justification?
I think looking and bringing things into perspective, it is indeed really amazing to see how much has happened in the last years, particularly if you compare and if you look into the 500 years of Reformation, which we are going to celebrate and commemorate in 2017, the last decades have brought important progress. We have heard the word about the ecumenical winter. As global communions we are, we know very well that there is no winter which embraces the entire world at the same time. There is always winter and spring and autumn and summer at the same time in the world. So we have to be able to see the signals, and we have to be able to build on those signals and in those activities and actions which give us to understand that indeed there is spring there. We are particularly grateful for the further development of dialogues. We are now looking into questions of baptism and growth in communion from that perspective. We consider that these are very important signs.
Where do you see the most important, if you like, signs of hope that you're talking about in different countries, perhaps? Because here in the West, it's true that we see new obstacles in the way of further growth towards unity.
No, I could refer to so many examples of wonderful cooperation between Catholics, Lutherans, but also Anglicans and Methodists and Reformed. All over the world, in so many contexts. We have heard it now because the Vice President of the LWF from Africa was with us, how important the cooperation in Tanzania is with the Catholic Church and how much they do together, celebrating Easter and Christmas together as a signal of joint witness as well. I have heard the Vice President from the Central and Eastern Europe saying that Catholic and Lutheran communities are reading together the book that Benedict XVI wrote on the Jesus Christ. So these are very encouraging things. We know of the struggles for justice, which, for instance, in Latin America, Catholics and Lutherans and Methodists and others, Anglicans together, for instance, regarding indigenous people, the joint engagement in Cancun now for the global warming and how churches are working together. So this is where I say we need to look to have a global perspective, and we need to look and to see and to recognize and to acknowledge and to appraise all the positive that is taking place without also ignoring that, of course, we are aware of difficulties, of obstacles, of delays and others. But all this is not going to halt progress which has been made and which I'm fully convinced is going to allow us to embrace the gift of unity in the future.
you're looking ahead, as you mentioned, to 2017, the 500th anniversary of the Reformation. You're focusing very much in the years leading up to that on reconciliation, aren't you, with different communities. Can you tell us a bit more about this?
In the year 2017, we will be remembering 500 years of Reformation, and we will do so with joy because of how much this says who we are as Lutheran Christians in the world. At the same time, we have been also learning to look critically back to our history. This year, in our 11th assembly in Stuttgart, we came to the conclusion that as Lutheran Communion, we need to ask for forgiveness to our Anabaptized, the Mennonite communities, because of what these communities endured from the side of Lutheran, the Lutheran Church in the 16th century. And this has made us sensitive to look critically and assess critically what has been also part of our history. So we are indeed going to remember with joy the 500 years of Reformation, but never in a triumphalistic way, never in a way that allows us or that impedes us to be self-critical also. We are, and we have been bringing also this, of course, to our dialogues here. We very much look forward to discover together what we can say together today, what we were not able to say 500 years ago. And there is a lot of that. And we should not miss this anniversary in order to come together and say together what we can say together, and thus being a witness that the risen Lord is indeed alive in the lives of our churches and is indeed alive in this world.
And yet you call this anniversary a test case for ecumenical relations, don't you? It's not easy to see how, in a sense, the Catholic Church can celebrate the Reformation, perhaps.
It is, of course, we are aware that we have a special responsibility for the 500th anniversary, and that we, of course, it is our very particular legacy out of which we interpret and understand our Christian faith. What we are committing ourselves is to do that in ecumenical accountability. We don't want to have a celebration which turns the back to others. We don't want to commemorate our 500 years of Reformation in undoing what has been done and written in the last and achieved in the last years. So it is bring into the picture and engaging together also into, and I think this is very important to remember, into a commemoration of 500 years of Reformation, which were never meant to be, something for the Lutheran Church. Reformation took place within the Church Catholic, and we continue aspiring that this could be understood as a contribution to the Christianity as a whole, to the body of Christ as such.
Are there any particular plans underway to involve the Pope to really show that the two churches are working together on this search for unity?
We are beginning to develop our plans. We have brought some ideas and we will continue discussing it. At the same time, I think it is important to mention that our bilateral dialogue commission is developing a joint statement on the ecumenical significance of 2017. And I'm sure that out of this document, which should be approved next year, out of this document, we will get a lot of ideas and directions as to what we could think more concretely. My personal wish is that beyond texts and statements where we could say together, as I said before, say together what we were not able to do 500, even 100 years ago, that we produced them. At the same time, I'm still wanting to find that sort of symbolic action, that sort of concrete, visible action, which would speak beyond, far beyond the boundaries of the Christian Church and would be recognized as a sign that the Christ, who became flesh and who is in our world and who inspires our lives as Christians, is alive, and that we can give witness to the Word of God in a way we engage together in 2017. I don't have yet the idea, but I am convinced we will find it.
there to Reverend Martin Junger, the General Secretary of the Lutheran World Federation. In other ecumenical news, Pope Benedict also met for the first time recently with Norwegian pastor Reverend Olaf Fikse Tveit, the General Secretary of the World Council of Churches. The Geneva-based organisation, set up in 1948, represents 349 Orthodox, Protestant and Reformed churches and Christian communities worldwide. During the audience here in the Vatican, Reverend Fikse Tveit gave the Holy Father a wooden box handcrafted in Syria to stress a common concern for Christians throughout the Middle East. Inside the box was a favourite book of poems entitled The Dream That We Carry and a pair of warm woolen gloves, a sign, Reverend Fikse Tveit told journalists afterwards, that winter can be beautiful too. After the audience, I talked to the General Secretary about the meeting and about his hopes for a new ecumenical springtime.
Yeah, we had a very open and friendly conversation. He emphasized in a very kind and also very strong way the importance of the World Council of Churches' work and also the ministry I'm called to do as General Secretary. And he expressed his also his interest in how we are now developing, how we are now planning for the work we are going to do in the future. He has himself been involved in our Commission on Faith and Order, so he knows at least one very important dimension of our work very well. And he's, of course, very interested in how we then work with our theological issues and how we also strengthen the work of unity between, and visible unity between the churches.
The Faith and Order Commission, of course, is where the Catholic Church is a full part of the World Council of Churches, isn't it? Although there has been talk of expanding.
Yeah, it is one of them. We also have a full membership of the Roman Catholic Church in the Commission on Mission and World Evangelism.
Would you like to see the Church becoming a more full member of the organisation as a whole, becoming more involved?
I hope that the Roman Catholic Church can be even more involved in the work we are doing. I'm not sure that the issue of a formal membership is the most relevant one and maybe not the most important one at the moment. But more, how can we strengthen already the strong cooperation we have? It is a cooperation in commissions, which we mentioned here. It's also a cooperation, for example, now in our own preparation for our own assembly in 2013. But it's also a cooperation that is going on every day. The World Council of Churches is a fellowship of churches around the world. And when I now travel around the world and meet with the member churches, in many cases, they say a lot about how they cooperate with the Roman Catholic Church on the local and national level. So it, for me, it's much more than only the link between Rome and Geneva. This is also about how we cooperate as churches in many contexts around the world.
At grassroots levels.
Yes, yes. And we emphasize that also in our conversation between His Holiness and myself, that, well, we have these important issues to deal with as leaders and as commissions, but also how are we every day responding to the call to be one in the local context and in what we do.
Talking about the contacts between Rome and Geneva, the Pope said recently that some people believe the ecumenical journey has lost its impetus, especially here in the West. And Cardinal Koch at the Council for Unity also talked about the controversial goal of ecumenism, saying the churches of the Reformation have perhaps settled for a kind of reconciled diversity, recognising each other's differences rather than seeking full visible unity. Do you agree with that?
Well, these are their words, and also it can be interpreted in different ways what they want to focus by saying that. I want to focus that on the fact that the World Council of Churches is a global organisation and it is an ecumenical organisation far beyond Western Protestantism. So I'm not here as a Western Protestant leader. I'm here as a leader of this global fellowship of churches, particularly also including the Orthodox churches. Seen from my perspective, I see that there are signals that can confirm these interpretation of what's going on. But I see also other signals. For example, I see a strong commitment in many of our churches, also the churches in the West and the Protestant churches in the West, for, I would say, revitalizing the ecumenical agenda and revitalizing how we can respond to the call to be one in many ways, not only in one way. I've tried in my speeches and in my conversation this year to remind the churches on this calling to be one and ask them, how do we respond to this? We can respond to it as a theological work. How do we find new ways of expressing what we have together in our common faith and also in our common ministry and in the sacraments? We can also respond to it in saying, this is also a call to try to do something together. For example, responding to injustices, to the needs of people around us. How do we do our mission? How do we share in the mission work? And I see a strong desire, and I would say also a strong tendency in many Western churches, as well as churches in other parts of the world, to see this broad agenda of ecumenism as one agenda. Let me mention also that this year I've been invited both to the World Conference of the Pentecostal Churches and to the big evangelical event in Cape Town, their mission conference. And in both cases, they were very clear in their emphasis on saying that the evangelical and the Pentecostal churches also want to share in this one ecumenical movement. They are very strong in expressing their understanding of what has been the WCC's agenda, working for unity in faith, but also unity in common witness and common witness for justice and for care of creation and for peace. So in many ways, they are wearing our clothes, which we, the WCC, was known for in the 70s and 80s. And we have now strong signals that they want to share also this agenda within the ecumenical agenda. So therefore, it's important to see that the picture is much, much wider. I think that's my perspective.
Would you say that the most exciting, the most interesting things, the impetus that you're talking about that's needed for ecumenism today, do you see that as coming from the evangelical, the Pentecostal world today?
I see at least very strong impetus coming.
Can it revitalize the older churches, in other words?
Yeah, I think so. I said in Stockholm, in my address to the Pentecostal, that we need you, but I also humbly believe that you need us. And when I met with them, some representatives from Pentecostal churches later on, they have quoted what I said and said, this is exactly what we want to say. We believe that the ecumenical movement can give us a lot and that we have a lot to contribute. But I also believe that what you call the old churches also have a lot to offer in the ecumenical movement. And this meeting with the Roman Catholic Church today has been a very strong affirmation of that, in my view.
Another area that you were hoping to discuss with Pope Benedict is the question of the churches in the Middle East. Were you able to do that?
Yeah, we talked about how this is a great challenge for all of us. How can we support the Christianity in the Middle East? We realize that the number of Christians are diminishing, particularly in a context like Iraq, where they are fleeing from the country and the ongoing conflict. But also we talked about the situation in Israel and Palestine and how the churches there needs to have a united witness. I mentioned how much the Roman Catholic Church is important there and also contributing to the one ecumenical voice in Jerusalem. I think we also share a concern that we know that this situation for the churches in the Middle East is also related to the political context and the political realities, both in Palestine, Israel, but also in other parts of the Middle East, and that there is a need for building trust, continuing our commitment to dialogue, and also to encourage the political leaders to do what I think they know what they have to do, but they need the courage and the support to do it.
Next year's theme for the Week of Prayer for Christian Unity has been selected and developed, hasn't it, by Christian leaders in Jerusalem. Do you think this can in any way help this movement of the churches together to witness and to become a voice for change?
Definitely. And I mean, this is also a preparation made in a cooperation between the Pontifical Council for Promoting Christian Unity and the World Council of Churches. So it is in itself also an ecumenical important initiative to strengthen the, I would say, the visibility of the churches in the Holy Land, but also to bring to the whole worldwide Christian family their contribution. I mean, it's not only that we shall think that they are in a very difficult situation and we support them. They also have a lot to contribute. And I think this week of prayer will show that. They have a very deep reflection of the content and the meaning of the gospel and what it means to live in a context where the gospel was first preached and also first realized in a way. I hope that this week really can become a week where we see as Christians around the world that the Christians in the Holy Land are not only there to steward museums. They are living stones, they are living witnesses of the message of Christ in a very difficult reality, but in the same place as Christ lived and died and was resurrected. And they have a very special place in world Christianity. And I hope that this can really strengthen all of us in our way of accompanying them, but also, I would say, learning from them.
Just one final question. You have any plans at all to invite Pope Benedict back to Geneva, to the World Council of Churches?
Yeah, there is a standing invitation from my predecessor. And I hope that there will be a way to find a possibility for him to have that on the agenda and visit Switzerland and Geneva.
But no dates set as yet?
No, but I hope that it would be feasible, yeah. It would be a great blessing for, I think, for Switzerland, but also for the international work that is done in Geneva, what we do, but also what the UN is doing there.
My thanks there to Reverend Olaf Fuchs-Itweit, General Secretary of the Geneva-based World Council of Churches. And that's all from me, Philippa Hitchin, and from all of us here at the English Programme for today. Join us again at this same time tomorrow if you can. Don't forget you can find all our news and feature programmes on the internet. Just look us up at www.vaticanradio.org/English. You're listening to Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.